and welcome to this week's Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. I'd love to get your feedback on the programme. You can write to me by email. The address is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. On this week's programme, I welcome back a regular guest on the programme, Paddy Madden. Paddy has been making seasonal appearances on the programme, discussing how the teaching of social, environmental and scientific education, or SESE, can be adapted for the various seasons. On this week's programme, we look at winter. Paddy Madden is a former primary school teacher who now works as a teacher educator in the Merino Institute of Education in Dublin. He also runs a section on the Blackrock Education Centre's website entitled Paddy's School Garden. Paddy is also a regular visitor to classrooms all around the country to talk about plants and animals in the environment. The third edition of his book, Go Wild at School, has now been published. When I met up with Paddy to talk about teaching SESE in wintertime, I noted that many people think of winter as a cold, dark time of the year, and then asked them if there's any practical work that can be done in SESE at this time.
Oh yeah, it's an amazing time. It's a great time to bring children out, and fantastic to see them come in with the ruddy cheeks and healthy, and you know, they get great satisfaction going out in the winter because you can see things better. Everything is more visible, and it's a perfect time to study birds and also some trees.
And when you say everything is more visible, Paddy, why is that? Is it because of the light or because there's no leaves around on the trees?
It really has to do with no leaves. If you take a tree at this time of the year, for example, what a time to look at the branches, for example. And many children actually ever look up at the branches of a tree, and this will integrate very well with your area in maths. And looking at the angles of the branches, you know, some are perpendicular, some go to a 30 degree angle, and some droop. And I think if you get children to stand back then from a tree and just sketch it, sketch the outline, and they'll see that each tree has a different shape or silhouette. You're reading trees by just looking at shape. And at this time of the year, the buds on trees are extremely clear. You can see the lovely black buds, for example, on the ash, and the pointed cigar-shaped buds on a beech tree, and the little grey, furry buds on the rowan. And what a great skill to give children, to read a tree.
Sometimes people will say that the best way to read a tree is to look at the leaves on it and to identify it by the leaf. So you're actually saying that there's other ways to read a tree.
It's a great skill. I mean, what, you walk along in a wood at this time of year, or you walk around your school grounds, or you walk along the canal. Your eyes and senses are opened if you're looking up and looking at the buds. And just saying, how many of them can I identify? Can I identify the ash? I can. Look at the horse chestnut, the big sticky brown buds. I can do that. The beech. You know, make sure the children can identify maybe 10 trees at least just by looking at the buds.
I suppose I'm a little bit surprised myself even that the buds are on the trees in winter. I would always have thought that they don't appear on the trees until spring. But when do the buds appear on the trees?
You're a product, Sean, of the old nature table and the old way of thinking, you know. And the students are the same. I get them to adopt a tree. That's one of the things they do in a Merino Institute of Education every year. For 6 weeks, they have to take a tree and adopt it and study it carefully. And they're always amazed when I say, and look at the buds. They're in there in the autumn. That's when you'll see them. You know, you'll even see them in the late summer. The buds are forming for next year. And isn't it wonderful to think that hope, you see those buds and they're full of leaves. But they're there. And another good thing this time of the year, because you have that lovely shape and silhouette, it's a good time to get the age of a tree. Again, integrating in with your mats. And that's very simple. You know, most native trees in Ireland, if you take them on their own, a very simple formula is to measure the girth 150 centimetres from the ground. Just get a string and put it around the girth, and then divide your girth by 2.5. So if your girth is 100 centimetres, you divide that by 2.5, so that's dividing 1,000 by 25, isn't that it? So your tree will be 40 years old. That's a nice friend. And it's good to get the children in to say, what happened 40 years ago when this tree was sown? I wonder what happened in Ireland. What happened in the world? What pop songs were there? What films were popular at the time? What books were being read? And you're back into history. This is history, your tree. It's your trigger. It's your springboard into a very practical way of looking at history. And now is a good time of the year to get the height of a tree. Use an isosceles triangle. And again, show the children if they stand back, and make sure to use cardboard, you know, because that if you use plastic, holding it up to your eye, it's not safe, you know, really. So use cardboard isosceles triangles, and you stand back and you kind of look up, keep one side of the triangle parallel to the ground, and again, get the children to bring in spirit levels, you know, from their daddy's toolbox or mammy's toolbox, that can be sexist, and bring in that and you know, make sure that they hold the triangle parallel to the ground. What a great way of introducing them to a very basic tool and levels, you know, and get them to stand back and then keep looking up at the tree until they eye the top of it, and then they stand there, and the height of that tree is the distance from where they're standing plus their own height, a simple formula that they can work out height of trees. Of course, I always get them to guess, you know, first estimate, as you do in maths, estimate the age, estimate the height, then actually do it. I usually get them to do it in pairs, you know, so that they can give them the opportunity to find out what's growing around their school. And also get the canopy of the tree. You know, what? Bring in a bit of geography. You know, looking down at a tree, what does the bird see? A bird wouldn't draw a tree like we do. It would draw this sort of a squiggly map. And you're introducing the mapping. You know, just get 8 sticks and put them around the outside of the tree or the perimeter where the branches stick out. You pick 8 points of the tree that are sort of sticking out, put your stick underneath, and then get graph paper, and using the centre of the trunk of the tree as a dot in the centre, you know, measure the sticks, how far they are from that centre, using scale, you know, this time, and then make a sort of a line around it and get them to get the area. That can be accessed on blackrockec.ie. Click on Paddy's School Garden and it shows you how to get the age of a tree, how to get the height of a tree and get the canopy on short videos.
That's great, Paddy. We've been talking a little bit about the deciduous trees when they lose their leaves. But of course, one of the more popular trees at this time of the year is the holly. Is there anything that can be looked at in the holly?
Well, isn't the holly just, it brightens up our lives, doesn't it, in winter, that green, and I mean, it does, lovely red berries. Did you know that the holly was one of the 7 nobles of the wood in Celtic mythology? The others, of course, were ash, oak, pine, hazel, yew, and the wild apple. And these became nobles of the wood because they were so useful to our ancestors. The holly shafts that were used, believe it or not, to make the holly branches and stems were used to make shafts on chariots. And the holly was used for feeding livestock as a fodder. That's hard to believe, you know, but the cattle are well able to eat it. Then, of course, the ivy at this time of the year, well worth a study as well. To show the children that it's one of the best trees for wildlife that we have, because at this time of the year it has flowers which are just going off, flowers full of nectar. I'm sure you have seen the lovely yellow flowers. You often see wasps, you know, and late flying butterflies, and they're sucking the nectar before they hibernate in the winter. And very shortly, those flowers will turn into blackberries, which the birds will eat. And many other trees have berries in the winter. Very few. So it's providing food for birds and food for insects at a time when food is scarce. And the other thing, of course, about the ivy, it's a great place for roosting. ladybirds hibernate in there, and also birds hibernate in it at night. Of course, there are pros and cons. You could have a debate in your classroom. It's a good way to have a debate. And if you look at the Touch magazine, which you can access through www.into.ie, click on In Touch. This month, I'm writing about holly and ivy. And I think the debate on holly and ivy, it would be good to have with the children. Should you let ivy grow on a tree or should you not? And there are people who say ivy should never grow on a tree because it strangles it. Well, that's false, of course, because ivy has got its own roots and it doesn't live off the tree that in that sense. But then, of course, ivy can act as a sail up there. It goes up onto the tree and it can wind, you know, it can trap wind and maybe knock the tree. It can also prevent photosynthesis of leaves, you know, it blocks out the sunlight. So, and then the other side, of course, is great for wildlife and shelter and everything. So it's a great, it would be a good debate to have in your classroom.
There'll be a bit of research to be done for both sides.
Exactly, yeah. And just to see, so just to make children aware that there's a conservation view on it and there's also the practical view that a forester would take, wouldn't be too keen to have all this ivy on the trees.
We haven't talked yet about too much wildlife, Paddy, but we always do. The birds at this time of the year... a lot of them have disappeared and I suppose some new ones have arrived from Greenland, but what can be looked at this time of the year?
Well, feeding birds, some people think, you know, right, we're doing a great favour, but oftentimes, you know, you're doing more damage than good, and it should be kept in mind. For example, if you don't move the bird table around the garden pretty frequently, diseases build up. You know, can all that defecation, all those birds around, maybe some of them have disease already, they're concentrated in a small area and you can do more damage than good. And I just think going into some of these garden centres and you see these big bird tables for sale, I mean, you'd nearly live in one yourself. I call them bird palaces, not bird table. They have roofs on them and all of that, and they're very heavy. But who's going to lug one of them around the garden? So you're better off to go off and make a lightweight bird table. Simply get one of those aluminium cylinders you have in a wardrobe for hanging clothes on, and use that as your shaft of your bird table.
This is the clothes hanger, and a wire clothes hanger, is it?
No, not a wire clothes. It's the tubular steel. It's not aluminium. It's steel. It's tubular steel that goes across the wardrobe on which you hang the clothes hangers. You can buy them in a do-it-yourself shop. So that's good as the shaft. I'll tell you why. Because it's nice and smooth, so cats can't climb up. They just can't, and cats love climbing bird tables. You could always put an inverted cone of some sort using either plastic or metal as well to prevent them from going up. And just get a bit of marine ply is good to make a bird table because it's waterproof and it lasts a long time. And put little lats around the edge of it, maybe just with spaces between the lats so that the water will drain off it. And just put this on your garden, in your garden, and change it, move it around pretty frequently around the garden, and then it'll be pretty healthy. So you should also have water, of course. This time of the year, birds need to keep their feathers in peak condition because they need to keep warm. So just get the lid of an old dustbin and inside in the lid, you know, put some cement in it and make it kind of rough so the birds don't slip in it. Just fill it with water and make sure to keep it water changed regularly. But that will act as for drinking, and also birds will wash their plumage in it. And again, move it around your garden. That's also on the Black Rock EC, how to make a bird bath.
And getting back to the bird table, Paddy, what kind of food should you give the birds?
Well, what a menu. Unsalted peanuts. Make sure they're unsalted, because sometimes they'll kill them. Cheese, they love, especially robins. Cooked potato, suet or lard. Don't use cocaine or fat. Some people, when they see fat, you know, give birds fat, they get margarine or saturated margarine or those cocaine and stuff like that from the fridge. Birds can stick to them. It can actually go into their feathers and make them sticky, and they can't clean them. So use suet or lard. Don't use cooking fat. Coconuts, of course, raisins they love. Wholemeal moistened bread. Make sure the bread is moistened. Wild bird seed, sunflower seeds, oatmeal, that's dry oatmeal, cake, apples, curds, bones with some meat in them, biscuits and meat scraps. And the best time to feed is November to March. Put them out in the morning when the children come in and in the evening before they go home. And make sure the bird table is visible from the classroom and sighted at least 2 metres from shrubs or trees so that cats and predators won't get at them. And make it about 150 centimetres above ground level.
And is there a risk that you could attract undesirable, say, rodents in particular to the school if you do
yes,
this?
Yes, indeed. There's always a risk of attracting rodents and vermin if you leave food out. If there's any food left there in the evening, you know, if it's on the ground, the rats are going to come at night around the place. You're attracting them. I myself, I'm in favour more of the mesh feeders. Or there's a feeder which I make from a 2 litre 7-Up bottle.
And how do you do that?
Well, simple enough. You get your gas burner. You know the one you have. Everyone has one for their emergency electricity, and get a poker or something iron. Poker is the right thing, and make it hot, you know, maybe even redden it over the gas, and make holes all over your 2 litre bottle, and then insert three little short bamboo canes for the birds to perch on. Make 2 holes in the bottom for a string, and hang it off a branch. Fill it to the brim, of course, first with unsalted peanuts. The great thing about having them around is, one, they won't attract rats to your school. 2, you don't have to be filling them up every day. And 3, and this is very important, if you have a bird table in the school and you're attending it, what's going to happen at the Christmas holidays? You're better off not to feed birds if you're not going to be consistent. Once you start in November and March, you just have to give, because birds are creatures of habit. So they'll be coming there every day and there's nobody around. So who's going to do it on Christmas Day? Is the teacher going to come in on Christmas Day? I don't know, maybe they will. Caretaker might look after it, but just be very aware of that. That's why I think maybe these big feeders, and they're going up on the Black Rock, how to make a bird feeder from a 7-Up bottle. I just always use them, and very seldom. I might use the tables during the daytime where children could look out at them. Now, I have pleasant memories of having in the classroom a table with binoculars on it and a bird book beside it, or bird chart. And children finish work, they would be over to the bird station and they would observe the birds through the binoculars. They thought they were real ornithologists and checking them. And I think that's a great way of getting children interested in birds. So have your table outside, maybe not have it in the daytime in the school, and make sure there's no scraps left for the vermin to come in after you go home.
And what kind of birds would you expect to see through the binoculars, Paddy?
Well, the mesh feeders there will attract the blue tits and the grey tits. They'll attract finches, green finches. I see the goldfinches of late, believe it or not, are very much attracted to the bird feeder. Birds that migrate to Ireland, you'll have siskins, you'll have the thrushes. If you throw apples on the ground, for example, just ripe apples, the thrushes will come on and blackbirds will come on and eat them. Also, the thrushes' cousins, which are migrants, the field fares and the redwings. And then robins, they like grated cheese if you throw that out for them. I think myself that the children would benefit from doing a bird survey. I like doing surveys with children. And there's a fantastic one up on birdwatchireland.ie. So each week you can input what birds are seeing. And you're actually contributing to a map of birds in Ireland and about how they're either increasing or declining, their diversity around the country. So very easy one to do is that bird survey. And I think talking about websites, if you want a fantastic website on the sounds of birds, it's www.rspb.org.uk. You can click on any bird and it's a short video of the bird and then the sounds of the birds, which are great to hear. You can also purchase birds now online from Birdwatch Ireland or from the IPCC. They look like the real thing. All you do is squeeze them and they make the sounds.
And I know, Paddy, you've been known to have an X Factor competition for birds in schools.
Yeah, I mean, God, the children, they love that little game. I play with them. I take the thrush and the blackbird and I say, you know, there's no dispute about which of these. There is a dispute, sorry, about which of these is the best singer. But they are our top birds for singing, the blackbird and the thrush. But which is which and which one is the best singer? So I say, now, supposing this was, we'll have a next factor here to see which of these birds is the best singer in Ireland. And you children are going to be the judges. I want you to sit back there and put on very serious faces. And the great moment arrives and Miss Thrush has stepped up onto the stage. And then I press the little toy thrush and Thrush sings for a while and does a big bowl of buzz. And then Mr. Blackbird up on the stage and Mr. Blackbird does his bit and then the children have to vote. And it's always great. Sometimes the thrush wins and sometimes the blackbird wins. But a great way of introducing them in a fun way to the different sounds that birds make. But I think the hygiene, that's really the important thing. Change that water regularly. Change those tables around. Every now and again, put boiling water on the table, the bird table, and kill any little parasites and that might be around.
Finally, Paddy, or we're getting near the end anyway, the school garden. Is there anything to be done in winter with the school garden? I imagine it's a fairly quiet time.
It's a quiet time, but it's a planning time. I've done quite a lot this year with schools and the Croke Park hours, after school with them, where they're planning what to do in the garden for the rest of the year. Now, I think most schools have come to the conclusion that there's no point in having one teacher or two involved in school gardening. It has to be cumulative learning. You really do need to start with infants and have a programme laid out for each year until they get to sixth class. And then you will turn them into observers of the world around them, gardeners, which is a fantastic hobby to have, to be able to garden, and really waken them up. And I'm afraid that is why I think that should be written on every school going in. We wake children up. We alert them. Because a lot of children aren't alerted to what's wonderful out there. And I can never understand how a child can say I'm bored, whether it's winter, summer, autumn or winter. There is so much to see, so much to observe. Each day changes and each day is a joy of opening and wonder. The other thing in the garden, get those beds, maybe cover them with the compost from your school or dung or that, and let the little worms pull that down. dig your garden. Why, never dig a garden. Let the worms do that digging. They'll pull that down and then they'll work away, and it'll actually prevent the weeds from being there. Because, you know, gardening is on you before you know it. Is it when, once January comes, you can start sprouting potatoes, for example, in the classroom, and then you're off. But have a plan made out at this time of the year so that everybody is working together on the school garden.
Earlier, Paddy, you mentioned that you have an article in The Current In Touch, and this is something you've been doing over several months now, is having articles in Touch. But I now see that the INTO have produced these articles on full poster-sized sheets, and schools might like to have them for the staff room. Can you say a little bit about them and where schools can get them?
Yes, they're produced on that corridor that you see around election time, those posters. They're very, very colourful, and each month is done out on them. This is the third year I've been doing the articles for In Touch. Each one is called Zoom In On, and they match in with the month that's in it. For example, in November this year, I zoomed in on fungi, which was seasonal, and in October, it was zoom in on fruits, wild fruits. And this month, it's zoom in on holly and ivy. And next month will be zoom in on rocks, and then zoom in on soil. They can be purchased, those boards, from the INTO. I think the price is either 180 or 200, but you get the whole set for the year, and you'll have them forever. It's a very good facility, I think.
Yeah, it'd be a great stimulus in a staff room to get teachers talking or to give them ideas for things they can do in SCSE.
Yeah, they're a bit like the old info boards. And I myself learned my nature from something like that. We used to have in every school in Ireland, the only bit of colour when I was in school was the Shell Guide to Ireland. But they were covered by topics, different topics. And I think that they were excellent. I'd love to get an old set of them. If anyone out there has a set of those old posters from the Shell Guide, I really would love to see them, because I learned a lot of my nature from them.
And if anyone has them, they can write to you at the same address that they can write to you if they want to get a copy of your book, which is Go Wild at School. And that email address, Paddy?
It's paddy.madden@mie.ie.
And that was Paddy Madden from the Merino Institute of Education. His book is titled Go Wild at School and is available directly from Paddy. You can contact him at paddy.madden@mie.ie. It costs around €15 plus €3 postage and packaging. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guest this week, Paddy Madden. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.